welcome to episode 13?
Yeah.
Wow, episode 13 of the Road to Change podcast. This is a 10,000 mile walk to stop the silence and stop child sexual abuse. My name is Matthew McVarish and I am the European Ambassador for Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse. And I'm in a van by the side of the road in northern Greece with my trusty companion, El Stego.
Stego, nice to meet you again.
So we are in random part of Greece where you can still see Mount Olympus out the window.
Mhm. It's beautiful.
We're about 4,000 kilometers from Athens.
4,000.
4,000.
Yeah.
I've been walking all day and I've still got another 3 hours to walk. What is it, 400 kilometers to Athens?
400-ish.
We've been walking. We left the capital of Bulgaria. I can't remember when. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I would say 2 weeks.
It's just the distance between the capital of Bulgaria and the capital of Greece is as far apart as the capital of Hungary and the capital of Romania. That doesn't matter if you don't know geography very well. Basically, it's a big long way, but it's taken me about a month to get to Athens. But how are you feeling, Stego?
Oh, I'm grand. I'm really good.
What have you been doing this week?
I've been working out. I've been up running as well, so...
Yeah, you're on a bit of a crazy health kick.
I feel so good now with my heart doing all good and stuff, so...
Yeah, regular listeners might remember that 2 months ago when the Road to Change was in Budapest, Stego had a wee visit to the hospital. Because, well, we never really got to the bottom of why your heart was freaking out, but...
Yeah, stress, I think. Yeah, I'm not sure, it was just... Yeah. That's what he said. So, but I'm feeling good now, and the other day I had to. We were walking down the road here, and came across a cliff of sort, and just under the cliff was water, and that was, it was beautiful. And I had to go down and go for a swim, and it was so nice, especially since I hadn't had a shower in 2 weeks. That's really good.
So you had a kind of a hobo bath,
yeah,
in the water.
Yeah, it was good. It was really nice.
Yeah, it's been, the last time we got a wash was in Sofia.
Yeah.
Which was, I can't even tell how far away it was. I've done about 250 kilometres this week since the last podcast. I'm just walking all the time. I'm losing track where we are. I go about 50 kilometres a day, which is about 30 mile.
Yeah, no, it was good. I'll hopefully get a shower tomorrow. So, looking forward to that.
Yeah, my friend Sarah from Wolverhampton has donated some money so that Stig and I can get a night in a hostel or somewhere that has a shower, which would be awesome. As I say, we do try and keep expenses low.
Yeah.
Yvonne's, you know, the van that we live in, called Yvonne, is a reasonably equipped vehicle. It has a fridge and it has a couple of hobs.
Cooker,
yeah. So, but it doesn't... It used to have a shower. It used to have a lot of things. It used to have an awning.
That's gone. Yeah. It used to have
mosquito nets. Doesn't have any of that.
I don't know what happened to them.
They just gently, one by one, broke. Yeah. All the windows are starting to kind of not open or close anymore.
We broke that window the other day. Just because it was kind of broken. And then that one, the hatch there, is getting broken as well, so...
So for anyone who's the first time listening to the podcast, my name is Matthew McVarish and my job is to walk around Europe. Well, the job that I've given myself as the ambassador of for Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, is to walk around Europe and try and raise awareness of child sexual abuse, which is a difficult subject to talk about, but what I've seen in all these countries is that depending on where they are with legislation and, you know, depending on what religion is predominant in the country, it's harder for some people than it is for other people to talk about child sexual abuse, which means that it's easier for some people, it's easier for certain people who want to abuse children to do that in certain parts of Europe. So by walking around Europe to every corner and every, you know, capital city in the EU, we're shining a light on these areas and asking for discussion about it. And that's really all we're doing. We're not protesting. When we do manage to encourage legislative change, we're delighted, you know. But we're not marching around Europe saying, you know, you must change the way you do things. We're just trying to encourage discussion and go, is the way things are at the moment the best they could be? And if not, how do we get there? And stuff like that. So yes, that's what we're doing. I walk 50 kilometres a day and Stigo drives the van where we sleep at night.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I mean, it's people. A lot of people have been saying, oh, you must be really excited to get to Greece because, you know, the weather will be nice. It's not really...
No, it's quite warm.
Probably most British people's experience of Greece is coming here on your holidays. And if you're here in that circumstance, I'm sure it's a lovely place to be. But it's actually, terrain-wise, which is how I look at it until I hit the city, it's quite a difficult country. You know, it's really mountainous.
Yeah.
We didn't go up and down Mount Olympus. We kind of went around it. But the wildlife here is pretty exciting. I literally stood on a snake today.
Yeah, I would have cried.
I shat myself. Yeah, you know, I'll be honest. It's been a scary week, actually.
Yeah. That text I sent you, like with
the dog.
With the
dogs, yeah. And
that
thank
was
you,
quite strange,
thank
yeah.
you so much to all the people on Facebook who were really concerned when I posted the text that Stigo sent me saying, "Look out for this million dogs up ahead." Because obviously he drives ahead, and then I walk to the van and we have a cup of tea, and then he drives ahead, and I walk again. So he sent me a text just saying, "There's a million dogs." Which really made me laugh when I saw it, so I posted it on Facebook, and everyone got a bit concerned. But, you know, because for me, I was like, this is routine, this is every day, this is, you know, I don't always post the texts we send each other online, but everyone was like, oh, make sure that you're running distance from Yvonne and stuff, but yeah. I've been dealing with wild dogs since Slovakia.
Yeah, we see dogs every day, but this time it was like, 15 dogs in one place, and they even, when I drove past, one dog jumped up onto the window next to me, so it was a bit strange, so yeah. That's why I sent you that. And
The dogs here, like, there's wild dogs in the past 10 countries or whatever I walked through, but here they seem to move in packs. They are definitely wild animals in a sense. They're not all the same breed. I guess they're so crossbred over the generations, it's hard to tell what kind of dog they are. They just look really unusual. But, you know, they move in packs, and they're probably more excited by a van, and they're going to run and chase a van, because the van's a really noisy vehicle. And so by the time I got to where you were talking about, there wasn't any dogs at all. But
No dogs. Yep.
But then there was a big, scary bridge. It was just because I can't walk on the motorway. You know, I'm trying to cross the country in the most direct route that's possible to walk on, and that did take me across this really precarious bridge.
And it's a bit dodgy.
It was, well, it was probably, I mean, like I say, I did a wee video when I put it on Facebook, it was structurally safe, but I'm just not good with heights.
No.
And, you know, when you're standing looking at it, I'm thinking, I know that this is possible. I know that, you know, Google Maps says I can cross this. But when you get into the middle of the bridge and you're looking down and there's the water was really noisy, and I was kind of like shaking, and I thought, well, you know, if you're ever frozen with fear, best thing to do is get your camera phone out, you know, make a video, capture the Kodak moment, post it on Facebook, make sure everyone knows what you're up to. And then there was another, a river burst.
Oh yeah, that one, yeah.
And I was walking, well, it was one of those things, because you'd already been there and came back and told me to change.
Because I couldn't cross it, so.
You couldn't cross it. And then Stigl came, he drives ahead, and then he came back 20 minutes later, said, up ahead there's a road closed, you won't be able to cross it.
I didn't think that you could just take off your shoes, but it wasn't a possibility in my head.
Well, but I did go a detour, but the river was so burst that it was going across the other road that I detoured onto, so I was like, I'm not detouring again, it would take me another extra hour of walking, so. That was nice. That's probably, my feet got a good wash. That's the first wash they'd had in 2 weeks. So that was lovely. Yeah. And if you imagine Greece is beautiful. If you're up in the mountains, which we often are, because we're cutting through these wee kind of dirt tracks and stuff, what we've noticed is that it rains in the mountains and it doesn't rain on the beaches, and that must be...
Oh, yeah.
I don't really understand the geography of that, or what would you call it, the natural ecosystem. But if you're up in a mountain, it's raining, and if you're down next to the beach, it's not raining.
Yeah.
Pretty much how it goes in a cycle. Crazy. But half the time we're up in the rain, so, you know, everyone's saying, oh, you're in Greece, it must be lovely weather. No. Every day it's rained, just because where we are.
Yeah,
like,
we had
in the mountains.
3 weeks of constant rain.
Every single day.
Yeah.
And when it rains every single day, we're in a van, we don't have any means to dry things. and I have two pairs of boots, but both boots ended up so wet that I don't know if you know, if you can imagine, if your feet are constantly wet. After about a few days of being constantly wet, I'd lost all the skin on my feet, which is why we took a rest day last week, because we had to just, I couldn't walk because there was no skin on my feet.
See, that's when we went down to the beach, and then all of a sudden weren't any rain.
We just drove down, stopped the beach, and we just spent, instead of wasting the day because I couldn't walk, I just basically cleaned out the cupboard and we did some practical things because two grown men living in the space of a phone box gets a bit messy.
Yeah,
things get, there's so much to organise. We actually have a lot of stuff in this tiny wee van.
We do, yeah. And it's crazy because once you put something down and you look away for 2 seconds, it's gone. Even if you're not here.
And like, how can it go missing in this? Like, we have no space and there's nowhere for things to go. And things, they disappear.
And they really disappear. You won't find it 2 months later and you might find it. But sometimes it's just gone.
And you could either get really upset about it or go, well, that's, you know, it's like a black hole. You know, this van is a mystery.
Stuff breaks as well, but I mean, it's just... Yeah,
but it's nice. Fun. Yeah. You know, we're here, and we're here because you guys are donating money to help us stay here. And we do love the project, and we love the support that we have.
Oh, absolutely.
And especially, you know, anytime something goes wrong, all we need to do is say on Facebook, oops, you know, we're a bit, you know, running out of money, or we're stuck. Does anyone know anyone in, you know, Northern Poland? And someone always does, and someone always helps us, and that's incredible, an incredible feeling, really, to be doing a project and know that there's so much support behind it.
So we're nearly
Athens, so it's going to take me another 7 days.
I
need to be there on the 11th, which is my dad's 75th birthday next week.
Right.
And
your wee dad.
My wee dad. He looks like a Dalai Lama. My dad looks more like him every day. So, so that'll be on the 11th of May is what the day that I'm scheduled to reach Athens. And I'm pretty sure I'll do it, you know.
We'll make it.
We keep having a detour. There's a lot of new roads getting built and stuff, which, like today, I've walked over 7,000 kilometres, and today a man came up to me who wasn't the police, he was just a man who walked on the road, and he said, you can't walk down here. And he said, you can't walk down this road, you have to go another way. And that's the first time that's happened in 20 countries in 7,000 kilometres. The first time a man said, you can't walk down this road, you have to go that way. So luckily there was another way. Otherwise I had to go back to where we started today, which was 30 kilometres back. But so that was weird. And then I stood on a snake and I shat myself.
Wow, I can't. No.
You're not a fan of snakes.
No, I would actually cry if I saw one. I don't.
They're everywhere.
I really don't like snakes.
I promise you. Out, see the grass outside this van as we sit, they're full of snakes.
Yeah.
Big and small ones. So yes. I faced my fear. I think you should go and catch a snake, Stiggle, because I walked across a really high bridge this week, which I'm okay with snakes.
I prefer heights compared to.
Yeah,
I mean, it's quite. Yeah, I'm actually quite afraid when I'm out running as well. It's just, I'm afraid it would be a snake. And I would shit myself.
Well, you if you saw one,
I would probably stand still and freeze for a bit, and then just run home and cry.
Well, if you imagine I'm walking down the road and,
but you can't really do anything about it.
The grass beside the road, you know, which is like, you know, kind of country roads at the moment, and it constantly, you know, maybe every 300 yards, the grass will make a kind of rustling noise as either a lizard or a snake scoots away from me.
This is fine. It's just snakes. No.
Yeah. No. And normally I don't quite even see what it was. The frogs are brilliant here. They're really musical. They make me laugh. But today the road was so narrow that I had to jump over the kind of small barrier and walk on the kind of the shrubbery bit. And basically, I looked down and all the grass and stuff was shaking a lot, and I realised that there was a snake writhing around in the grass, and then I looked down and the end of it was under my foot. So I was trapping this poor animal, and that's why. Because then, I mean, it seemed like all this happened over 30 seconds. It happened in an instant. I looked down and the grass was freaking out, and then I realised I was standing on a snake and I shat myself.
Yeah, I got a funny text from that as well. Like, shat myself, exclamation mark.
Thankfully, I mean, I hope they're not venomous. As far as I'm aware, they're not venomous. Yeah. But I'm sure they're not. I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah.
Maybe someone can Google that for us. That would be quite good.
Well, yeah. The thing is, though, Stiggle, Sorry, I'm just drinking water. Oh. The thing is, do you know that phobia is... Obviously, phobia is like an irrational fear. Like, you know, logically, these snakes are not dangerous. Yeah. Even if they bit you, it wouldn't even be dangerous. And if they did bite you, it wouldn't even be as sore as half the things I see you accidentally do to yourself most of the time anyway.
Nah.
So... The thing about phobia, I remember watching a documentary about phobia years and years and years ago, and it said that phobia is when your mind chooses something. There's some sort of experience or some sort of sensation that you're actually scared of, and your brain will choose something to be an icon for that feeling. So what I mean is, like, there was a woman in the documentary who was scared of ketchup. She had a pathological fear of ketchup. Now, obviously, you know, ketchup's a harmless unless you've got an allergy. It's a harmless substance. So spiders and rats and snakes are other common phobias, but really they're harmless. You know, they're not going to run up and chase you, and they're not gonna, most of them are not even.
Nah, I've been told all my life that they're probably more afraid of me than I am of them. So
yeah, I mean, I've seen that. I mean, that snake, that poor thing I was trapping today, accidentally was terrified of me, and as soon as I moved my foot, it was gone. It couldn't have got away from me faster. But I remember at the time when I was thinking about that. And that's how I wrote the play that I wrote about child sexual abuse called To Kill a Kelpie. And it was because I was thinking, well, do I have any phobias? And I did. I'm scared of sea creatures. And so, like, if you think that the thing that you're scared of isn't really the thing you're scared of, it's just something that you choose to be, to represent what it is you're scared of. And so I when I realised I was scared of sea creatures, I was like, well, what is it about sea creatures that makes me scared? Because most of them are mythological and not even real, you know. What's the point of being scared of that? And what I realised, I was scared of the sensation of, if you imagine standing in water, that feeling of the unknown, like something can touch you below the waist and you don't know where it's coming from, and you can't even see it, and you can't stop it. So that's where the idea for the Kelpie came up, To Kill a Kelpie, and basically that, what it was a phobia that I'd had because of the years of being sexually abused by my uncle, and that feeling of just lying there, and, you know, I don't have any sort of power over what happens to me. And when I realised that, then the actual fear of kind of Kelpies disappeared. But, yeah, so the play To Kill a Kelpie, if you want a copy of the play, send me an email. There it's actually published as a book. You can buy the book. And a few dollars from that goes to Stop the Silence. And, yeah, and there's also a movie, which very shortly will be up on the website. You'll be able to stream the movie, and by doing that, you support Stop the Silence and Road to Change as well. But, I'm struggling. Tell you what, our third member of the team is already in Athens, helping us set up events there, and so she's going to give us a wee report about what she's been up to. So whilst I just cough myself to death, let's go and hear what Mandy Bobs is doing.
Still in Athens, just standing on the roof of my new host's house. Landed on my feet here, another lovely host, another lovely house. It's nice and sunny, beautiful day. All the houses here either have balconies or roof access, just standard. That's great. So what's been happening here? Well, Alex, the guy that I'm staying with just now, took me through to a place called Nafplion on the 1st of May, which is just it's about an hour outside of Athens, big town next to the coast. So the 1st of May here is a holiday, a public holiday, so everybody was off, and a lot of people head through that way because it is so beautiful. You know, cliff faces, beautiful beaches, crystal blue water, the 13th century castle ruins is somewhere I definitely want to go back to. So through going there, I met his lovely friend Elliot, who is part of a kind of cultural committee, a society that set up events and monitor the culture, I suppose. So we were looking at the possibility of setting up a film screening of Matthew's film To Kill a Kelpie through that way. Because I think Matt should really get through and see this place. You know, the guy deserves a day off. So looking forward to that. Also been doing the tracking and the follow-up, the never-ending task of the tracking and the follow-up, which is basically when I get in contact with anybody that Matt's been in touch with on the road, whether it's political, NGO, an individual who's been affected by abuse. and I've got a questionnaire that I fill out with them to track any change or influence that the Road to Change has had on how their city is going to approach child sexual abuse. And then this information gets stored in a database that gets sent back to Stop the Silence in Washington, and it contributes towards the development of future models for further programming internationally across the world. So in a way, I suppose the Road to Change, from their point of view, is like an experiment, because it's, you know, this has never been done before. It's a very unique way of raising awareness and working with child sexual abuse. So they monitor what worked well and what didn't through this tracking and follow-up and implement it into future projects. It's boring as hell. I really don't like that part of my job. You know, it's the task that I keep putting off, because again, it's just repetitive. I mean, when it's all right when you're speaking to an individual, you know, and you get to hear their story, that's a bit more interesting. But when you're chasing up MPs who are always in and out of meetings and calling up newspapers and looking for demographics that most of the time they don't know, you know, it's not fun.
Thank you so much, Mandy Bones. I'm glad that the weather's lovely down there in Athens. We'll be there shortly. And I just want listeners of the podcast to understand that Stiggle, who drives the follow vehicle and does all the stuff fixing up the van and you know, feeding me and all these kind of things whilst I'm walking, and Mandy Bobs, who's already in Athens setting up the meeting, so when I get there, that the project has a lot to get done. These two wonderful people are working completely for free. They're volunteering their time. They're over here, a long way from home. They're, you know, I was going to say they're on their own, but Stiggle's stuck with me. Yeah. And they're putting up with all of this just to be part of the Road to Change. And obviously, like myself, their presence here relies entirely on your donations. So thank you so much to Mandy Bobs and Stiggle, and also to you guys for all the money you've donated to help this project literally come to life. So yeah. We had a question last week that we missed out, Stiggle.
Yeah, I missed that. I'm sorry about that. So, all right. So Denise Brendan asked, how do you feel about Joe Public, who seemed to not want to address abuse and continues to talk with abusers, but avoid a person being abused?
That's quite a specific question. How do I feel about people who ignore when they've heard that someone's been sexually abused and they're continuing to hang out with the person who allegedly abused them? I mean, it's a hypothetical situation that you're talking about. Obviously, as a survivor myself, that situation brings up a lot of anger. As someone who's trying to change, you know, the way that the public address child sexual abuse, that it brings up a lot of frustration. But you have to look at situations like that and go, why would that be happening? Why would people be ignoring the victim and ignoring, you know, the whole situation and continuing as normal? On an individual basis, people, you know, are to blame for their actions, but culturally, there's so many factors that have meant this is the way it is. You know, and that's what we're trying to change. There's just cultural norms that I think a lot of us, well, all of us, cultural norms that a lot of us have accepted for so long, and we're just not. Well, hopefully, if you're listening to this, then you're one of us who doesn't want to put up with this any longer. We want society's behaviour to be different, and we can change that. We can change that. It's coming from the top. You know, the government. Just I see it differently as I go to all these other countries. The priorities over here. Perhaps not specifically on child sexual abuse yet, but certainly in the UK, they're coming from, you know, the heads of government as to address this issue and trying to change people's intent to act when they do hear or see something, and speak out and actually address the issue. So, yeah, so I'm frustrated by that. I detest the ignorance, really, but I'm hopeful that it is starting to change.
Yeah, and why is this such a common theory? To shun the child in ignorance is bliss.
Well, like I just said, it's cultural norms, and it has been for generations and generations. But I think, you know, take something like smoking, and when the governments used to make so much money off cigarette tax that they tried to get everyone hooked on smoking, And then cut to a few decades later when the governments realised how much money they were paying to rescue people from, you know, all sorts of cancers and kind of all these things that making people smoke was causing so much, a much bigger cost mm-hmm. to the government. It was costing them more to repair it than it was that they were actually making by, you know, by the tax of the product. Then they actually redressed it, and it came from the government. They changed their health policies, and that eventually changed the attitudes of the public. And once the attitude changed, then their behaviour changed, and so many people stopped smoking. But that didn't come from the public. That came from the top. So I think when governments realise how much money they're spending to in courts time and police time and actual health workers' time, like many survivors end up with social and emotional problems, which can lead to alcoholism, which can lead to drug addiction, which can lead to, you know, all sorts of social illness. There's even been a study that shows the psychological stress of being sexually abused in your childhood, that stress that's on your system that you live with for your entire life, can actually manifest as kind of chronic disease. So when you realise so many things that the government spends much money trying to fix, like, you know, illness and homelessness and alcoholism and all these things, all that money they invested to clean it up would actually be better spent reducing it, the same way they kind of, you know, they sent out the message to stop smoking and everyone eventually, or the majority actually did.
Yep.
If they would prioritise reducing and tackling child sexual abuse, they would actually see a reduction in all the other things that cost the government money, you know. I don't think I explained that very concisely, but, you know.
That's how it is.
I've walked 36 kilometres
today. You still have 15 to go.
I know.
Another 10 miles. Yeah.
It's just that. We're nearly there. Well, we're not nearly there. But, you know, it's just my life.
Nearly.
So we want to tell people that one of the partners of Road to Change is the Moira Anderson Foundation, and its founder and Sandra Brown OBE, who is just, if you ever get the pleasure of meeting Sandra, she's an angel on earth.
Yeah.
She has a play called One of Her Own that she's written about her own story. The Moira Anderson Foundation that she founded was inspired by the situation with a young girl who disappeared in the 50s and was Sandra's kind of friend, and it transpired for many, many years. Sandra believed her own father was the person who abducted and killed that little girl, who to this day her body hasn't been found. And then only this year the police they basically accepted that Sandra's father was responsible. So, and she spent years and years fighting for, you know, especially, he died over a decade ago, but, you know, whilst he was alive, Sandra spent a lot of years trying to get him to tell us, you know, where the child's body is and stuff. And so it's this fantastic, not fantastic story, it's when you read it, well, Sandra's written a book and also a play, it's fantastic in the sense that it was so unbelievable.
Yeah. All of it.
All of the story. Yeah. And thing is, yeah, it's believable because it's all true. And that's what Sandra has put into this play called One of Her Own. It's the story of Moira's disappearance and also Sandra's journey into becoming, you know, the founder of the Moira Anderson Foundation. It's an incredible, incredible play that she's done. She's done it in New York, and she's done it all over Scotland. She uses the play to go into schools to teach kids about child sexual abuse and you know, keep themselves safe. And she's going to perform her play. It's a one-woman show that she goes on there in front of the audience and does by herself. She's performing that for Road to Change to raise some money for the three of us out here in Europe to keep doing what we're doing. So, thank you so much to Sandra. But if you guys want to go and see that play, and I promise you, I've not ruined it for you by telling you what the content is, because when you go and see it, it's an incredible story. So it's on Thursday, the 8th of May, which is next Thursday at 8 p.m. In Coatbridge. It's at the Drama Attic on Cameron Street. So yeah, to reserve tickets, we're going to read this out. Call 07931 957913.
Yeah.
Did I read that right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. We'll get our producer Tommy to put that number on the actual show notes at the bottom, so you can see that number. But yeah, if you want tickets, it's next Thursday night, 8 p.m. in Coatbridge. So obviously, if you're in that area, get your wee bums along to see it. It's an incredible show. Meet Sandra; she's an incredible woman, and you'll be supporting the Road to Change all at the same time. So I actually
Nailock of the week must go to you.
It goes
again,
to me.
Like third consecutive.
Did I get the Nailock of the week last week?
No,
I always think it's you.
So it's you.
Okay. Well, Nailock of the week goes to me because I had a really bad reaction to some mosquito bites. In fact, I had many bad reactions. Both of my legs look like I have 7 knees on each leg. Because each bump has swollen up to, well, it's like an inch away from.
Yeah, it looks like he's got a golf ball in
under my skin. And all over my legs. So, yeah, Stego said, I found a lovely place to park tonight, so we drove down to this show.
It was lovely though, wasn't it?
I know, but look at you, like, you've got one bite and it's not even swollen. And I look.
And that wasn't even from that time, that was before that.
That's because.
It was quite funny because we sat outside for the same amount of time and you got bit through your.
I was wearing clothes.
Yeah, and then you were like, no, I need to go in. And I'm like, all right, okay.
So I'm on antihistamines and I'm also on anti-inflammatories.
It was
because I've got sweet Celtic blood, you're a Viking, and the mosquitoes are like, ew, don't
I'm forever that. Alone, no one wants me.
Oh, Nailock. Yep, thank you so much to you guys for all your support, for listening to the podcast. Peace. Share and tell your friends about the Road to Change as an awareness project first and foremost. So the more people that know about it, you know, the more conversations of child sexual abuse prevention we create. And of course,
what?
I'm just excited to get rid of this beard.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for all the kind comments about it, folks. But I only have a beard because it's been 3 weeks. Since we stayed anywhere that had a plug socket, so I have some beard trimmers that are lying there waiting to get used. And thanks to Sarah, my friend, we're going to get a night somewhere where I can plug it in and finally get this thing off. It's like walking with a doobie on my face. It's so hot here. Yeah. So, yes.
But it looks good on you.
Oh, bless you. Well, I'm not a fan of it. I mean, it's not really for aesthetics, but my boyfriend likes it, so that's fine. But, yeah, the Road to Change is a project organised and supported by Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, in partnership with the Moira Anderson Foundation. If you'd like to support what we're doing over here and all of our efforts, go to roadtochange.eu and there's a big donate button. But, any final thoughts, Stiggle?
No, not really. Just, we'll regret the shower, so can't wait.
can't wait to get a shower.
Well, cool. Thank you so much, Ty.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, see you next week.
Yeah.